It's Friday. It's just about 8 p.m. It's time to open the doors on the Mobile Creator Clubhouse. Well, you're very welcome to week 3 of the Mobile Creator Clubhouse, a kind of virtual speakeasy, if you will. Each week I'm chatting to members of the international mobile content creator community. I'm your host, Glenn Mulcahy. I've spent over 20 years working in broadcast TV news, and I've been fascinated with technology, innovation and disruption. I've organised an event which explores and celebrates mobile content creators for the last few years, and my business these days is training brands, companies and NGOs how to leverage their team's potential as storytellers and content creators using their smartphones. The annual event that I've run, MojoFest, was cancelled last week, you may have heard, for the second time. So I see this show, I guess, as a weekly get-together, a place where ideas can continue to flow, speakers can share their insights, and listeners, hopefully, will ask a question. And on that point, you can raise your hand in the Clubhouse app and I'll try to get to you as quickly as I possibly can. Or, if you don't want to speak, you can always just send me a question via DM on Twitter. To do that within the app, if you tap on my avatar, go to View Full Profile, you'll see my Twitter handle, jump over to my account, and I've set my DMs to open. Also, if you're enjoying the conversation today, please do know that you can share it with your followers, and I'd very much appreciate it if you did so. Now, over the last two episodes, I've chatted with Matthew Feinberg, who's the founder of Alight Creative. They're the developers behind Alight Motion. And last week, I spoke to Scott Cahill, the co-founder and CTO of Moondog Labs, and also their chief branding officer, Sean Connolly. Now, I've yet to upload last week's interview to Anchor. I hope to get to do that this weekend. This week, I'm chatting with a man who's actually joined me through all of the recent activities that I've done as a result of the pandemic. He was one of the very first guests in the Mobile Creator Summit series last year, and he was also one of my early guests on the Mobile Creator podcast. Well, fresh from winning several International Mobile Film Festival awards, and recently hosting a series of excellent tutorials on Filmic Pro, filmmaking techniques, he joins me again. Let me just add him up onto the stage here. Cass, he's standing by. Cass, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. How are you doing? Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you loud and clear. Yeah, good to catch up with you. How are things in London?
Quiet.
Will we deal with the lockdown chat to begin with? Like, how long is your lockdown going to land? We just discovered this week that we're on lockdown until the middle of April now.
Yeah, so we started, beginning of January. And if we're lucky, we might be out of lockdown by mid-March, but I think it will be longer.
Yeah, it's definitely very, very unpredictable, isn't it? And I don't know how you feel about it this time, but I have to say I'm really struggling this time. I don't know what it was. Last time there was a kind of a novelty factor to it or something. I don't know. The kids as well seemed to respond to it much better last year. But since Christmas, all of our spirits have been really down. It felt really caged this time. It's hard to describe it, actually.
Yeah, I think third time around on lockdown, it has taken its toll. You know, first time it was keep your spirits up, keep going. You know, we'll get through this. You know, second time, okay, we understand. You know, we've got to get through this. Third time, you know, this has been the longest lockdown. It's certainly taken its toll on home life and schooling, you know, the kids and, you know, and we've all turned into a very, very hairy cave-dwelling family.
Oh, dude, on that, I swear to God, the other day I had a client that was trying to book me for a gig and we decided to do a Zoom call to discuss their needs and I had kind of forgotten that Zoom could be video as well as sound. And she came, we worked together about 5 years ago and when I came on camera, she went, "Mother of Jesus, you look like you're actually a caveman." And I'm going, "Oh, Christ, yeah, I forgot." Like, the hair is down to the shoulders, the beard looks particularly unkempt. So yeah, I look like something like Tom Hanks on a deserted island. But anyway, that's the COVID look. I think we should get that trending. Let's do hashtag COVID quiff. Show us your hair. I saw Dan Rubin posted a shot there about 2 or 3 weeks ago and he's completely unrecognizable. So, you know, yeah, it's a thing. It's a thing. It's right up there with the old sourdough baking.
I liked John, I don't know if you saw John, is it John Gill?
John Gill, yeah.
In Scotland. Yeah, he did his pajama video. Yeah, he just gave up. Went out filming with his pajamas on. Brilliant.
Yeah, well, yeah. Everyone copes in different ways. What can I say? Well, you've managed to turn a negative into a positive, if that's really possible. So, like, London Falls Silent. When we were on the summit last year, you had just dropped it, if you will. You and several other filmmakers. Not everyone, obviously, who's on today's chat will necessarily be familiar with that episode. Can you recap the background story to that, just a tiny little bit for the listeners?
Sure. So yeah, originally, I mean, I was just doing it myself. I was volunteering on the front line, delivering food and medicines to families. So I was driving around London quite a bit during that first lockdown in late March. Of course, got the mobile phone with me. I was seeing London like I had never seen in my entire life. And I just felt it would be sacrilege for me as a filmmaker to not document this time, you know, and hopefully never have to see it again. But it was very chilling and spooky. And so I just started filming the streets and some of the famous places, the famous streets, you know, Trafalgar Square and the South Bank. And it was just eerie, you know, just absolutely no one around. And through that, I then came up with the idea of, I desperately wanted to know what filmmakers, you know, how filmmakers were coping in different parts of the world. So the idea of the world falls silent came to me, and I reached out to filmmakers around the world, from China, Australia to America, and Europe as well, and even branched out to Africa to get them to document what was happening in their area during the pandemic. And so that created the video series of The World Falls Silent. And then obviously out of that came my little part of it, which is London Falls Silent, which is just a short film that just sort of, you know, just takes you on a journey, hopefully, and documents what's been happening, you know, in the empty streets. Because for me, it was beautiful and deeply sad at the same time, you know, whilst filming it.
Absolutely. I mean, so that was that May? Was that April or May last year, wasn't it?
No, I filmed, I began filming on the day of lockdown. March 23rd.
Wow. Okay. The question strikes me, right? Because this is an ongoing phenomenon and with no immediate end in sight, have there been any plans for you to continue the evolution of that project, to go like almost as though we're going through the different waves, to look at different phases of that storytelling as well?
Yeah. I had thought that through quite a bit, but it's difficult to know at what point to document how much time or commitment is needed to be able to cover all the different sort of periods of time that we're going through over the last year. It's frustrated me because it's very difficult to do that with no budget at all. Mm-hmm. And it's not something I've been able to pursue. And to be honest, the lockdown, since the original lockdown, have been very, very different. I mean, the lockdown now, there are people on the streets. There is still a lot of traffic. There are still a lot of people going around wherever it is they're going. So, you know, in documenting that, it would be difficult to show an awful lot of difference. I've not managed to find a way of documenting that or thinking it through, to be honest.
Interesting. Okay. Well, look, let's turn to more recent events, in the sense that over the last, certainly since January, maybe you dropped it in December, but the series that you've done recently with Filmic Pro, which is Tips and Techniques for Filmmakers, talk me through a little bit of the evolution of that project.
Yeah, well, that actually started back in June of last year, 2020. And it was just an experiment, really. I wanted to excite people more about mobile filmmaking and its potential. And I felt if I can show something visually that's interesting, that is, you know, nicely shot, and shows the basics of how that's done, I just thought it would be an interesting combination, you know, filming, whether it's working with models or actors or creating scenarios. I think it just, I personally, if I was online, I find that more engaging to see and behind the scenes, you know, how did that person set that shot up with the phone, etc. And also just someone saying, you know, and telling you, okay, so this is what you do, set up the light here and here. And it sort of went from there, and I created a couple of videos, sent them to Filmic Pro were buzzing about that and just said this would be amazing to continue, you know. So, and it kind of went from there, so we tried to continue it from that point.
How many videos are there in total at this stage? Are you, is it 10, 12? There's a lot. Like, I saw them on the website.
There's eight that's officially been released. There are there are three others floating at the moment. Mm-hmm. Because we're trying to develop we want a bit of a backlog to videos, so I'm kind of building on them. I've got two or three in development. I've been filming with the iPhone 12 Pro Max, And I'm also going back to basics and doing a video shooting with the iPhone 6S just to show what is still achievable, what you can do with an iPhone 6S, because I still believe that, you know, it's just, it's what you do with it and what you put into it that's actually more important than the phone itself.
Well, that'd be really interesting to see. It, will it or will it not be a compare and contrast between the feature set of the 12 and the 6, just out of curiosity?
Well, I mean, you could do that. I think I would like to, because it's a really good point, Glenn, but I tend to react by the engagement I get online by people from all over the world that have different makes, models, and so on. And there are many people that aren't with the latest phones, and I think it's important to offer some inspiration to say, well, you don't need to be on the latest phones. You really don't. You can still, you know, with a bit of technique and a little bit of skill, you know, you can still create great content. A comparison between the iPhone 6S and an iPhone 12, I kind of think we know where we're going to go with that, but I still think you can achieve a lot on the iPhone 6S.
Yeah, 100% agree with you. For those who haven't seen any of the series, do you want to just call out what the kind of core headings were in each one of the videos, Cass? Can you remember them?
Oh, crikey, no, I can't. But they're sort of broken down. The video series is on Filmic Pro's YouTube channel. There's 8 up there at the moment, and they tackle all different aspects of how to use Filmic Pro, the actual recording app. There's video on just purely manual focusing and how to create some depth of field, some tricks on how to create some depth of field to your footage. There's one on low lighting. There's one on night shoots. There's one dealing with, obviously, shadows, resolution issues or, you know, pixelation in the image. So we sort of tackle that. Exposure. There's one on filming structure for a short documentary piece and stuff like that.
Yes, very good.
A fair amount.
They're all embedded, folks, on the Filmic Pro website as well, so you can either pick them up on YouTube or on the Filmic Pro website, where the full list of them is there. But I love the FMB one in particular. I think that was really, really interesting. It's something that...
Oh, my little FMB trick.
Your yeah. FMB, yeah. So... Do you want to explain to people what FMB is, for fear that they're thinking there's some bizarre covert stuff going on here?
Well, it was just something that I sort of created myself because it helped me think through how to get depth of field to the shots. Obviously, we're dealing with tiny little sensors, tiny lenses on phones, so it's difficult to get some really nice soft focus and sharp focus on the foreground. And coming from a professional filmmaking background in the sense of working with mainstream camera systems, it took me a long time to adjust to the fact that the mobile phone lens does, of course, create and produce very different types of imagery. So, and I wanted to see how I could push that. So the FMB, the idea of that is to use, when you're out filming on location, is to use the physical location that you're in. Use something in the foreground. For example, if you're filming an actor or a model, and there's a phone box, and they're standing on the pavement, and then you've got the background of the street or shops, then you sort of place them in an area where you know that if you focus sharply on them, the foreground will go into soft focus, and of course the background will go into soft focus as well. So I use it as a term to FMB, always FMB my shots. Find the foreground, find the middle area to get your sharp focus, and then the fall off will be in the background, if that makes sense.
Yeah, perfect. Makes perfect sense. I noticed on, I think it was Twitter in the last couple of days, that you've been tweeting about the Moondog Labs new sunshade, trying to balance that off on the gimbal. Can I just ask you, this is not a plug for Moondog, in fairness, like we had them on last week chatting about the product and everything, but I know that you did talk at length about the issue of fixed aperture with smartphones and the idea of your only control level being ISO or shutter speed, and how a neutral density filter really, really is super important if you want to try and get any control over the actual exposure value. Do you want to tease that out a little bit? Yeah. Like, was that part of what you're experimenting with?
What, with the smartphone hood, or, sorry?
I think you had both the filter mount and the smartphone hood on the phone, did you? Or maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, well, I mean, the ND filters for me is a must on the phone, particularly with Filmic Pro, because it's all about keeping the correct shutter speed and to get that more sort of filmic softness and motion that we're used to seeing with our own eyes. And it's trying to replicate that by, and the only way you can, I think you can push it to that level is by using ND filters. And so I've always used ND filters on my phones, even since the early days. I've always found ways to clip on an ND onto my phone. So I just think that's key if anyone's exploring it on a very serious level. I mean, everyone's into mobile video and filmmaking for different reasons. For me, it's to shoot professional drama or documentary music video content. So I kind of need to get to that level with it. The smartphone hood, I think Mark is on here as well. Yeah, hey, Mark. He reminded me the other day, I did a makeshift DIY out of black foil matte hood around my phone, you know, that I put out on Twitter quite a while ago. But for a few years, I've been using hoods that were designed for the screens on, you know, drone remote control.
Yeah, 100%.
So you can get these foldable hoods that actually just sort of clip onto the sides of it so that you can actually see the screen that you're controlling your drone on. And I found that they would fit phones. So I'd been using them for a good couple of years now, if not a bit longer. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, I think Moondog recently mentioned it as well, that they'd seen a couple of images of me doing that and came up with the idea of the hood. And it's bloody awesome. It works really well. I'm over the moon with it.
Yeah, ditto, except I managed to drop my iPhone 11 Pro Max when I was putting it on and cracked the back case on it, which was wonderful. I haven't managed to upgrade to a 12 yet. I'm afraid the taxman is still banging on the door from last year, so it's not top my priority list. But nonetheless, I gather you have managed to bite the bullet and get a 12 Pro Max. What are your initial impressions? Like Dolby Vision, is it worth the paper it's written on, so to speak?
Well, I've managed to... You think in lockdown you've got all the time in the world to do things, but when you've got the kids and schooling and everything else, it gets a bit manic. So I've not had a lot of time with it, but I did manage to do a night shoot in central London with the iPhone 12 Pro Max last week. And I shot in, obviously, using the fantastic new Filmic Pro's 10-bit recording that they can now do on log capture. Mm-hmm. And that side of working with the iPhone 12 Pro Max has been absolutely mind-blowing in what you can do with the color grading afterwards. The levels that you can now push it at are far exceed what was capable before. So that's really exciting. Mm-hmm. As far as the lenses, I'm still very 50-50 about where the lenses are at on the iPhone 12 Pro Max. I think that Apple are very cleverly holding back on the technology that they have. I wasn't overly impressed. I think on a night shoot, the new sensor, there is definitely an improvement working under low light, but there's something going really wrong, I think, with the lenses on the new iPhone. So I mean, it's been there for a while. I think even back to the iPhone 7 and 8, the issue started to occur. But what I'm getting at is the artifact. I call it the ghosting mirroring that's happening through bright light coming from lamps or from windows or from neon lights or anything at night that you're filming, car lights, anything like that. The reflection issues that are going through the lens, I think, is a really, really serious issue on the iPhone 12 Pro Max. And I found a lot of my footage was unusable.
Wow.
When I got it back, because I just wasn't happy or satisfied with the amount of ghosting that was coming across the screen. I've talked to a few techie people recently who are kind of in the know, and it's interesting because they're all aware of this issue. They all know it exists, but there's no solution yet as to how to tackle the issue of artifacts. And because what I'm basically saying is, it's not about getting a light streak coming across your lens. It's kind of a lens flare. It's beyond that. What's happening is, I think, the light is going through the lens from an outside source, and it's actually bouncing off the metal of the sensor, and it's reflecting back through the glass, and it's causing a ghosting issue. So when I say a ghosting, you're seeing 2 to 3 times the same image, if that makes sense, within your frame.
Yeah, I haven't witnessed it or seen it actually anywhere else, so it's really interesting to hear that you have had a lot of people circle back saying, yeah, we're aware of it. That's amazing.
Yeah, and I'm talking people who really are in the know. They know it's there. But it's not something that Apple to tackle. Now, I talked about anti-glare on the glass. You know, I said, is this an issue with, you know, the anti-glare coating on the glass of the iPhone, the new iPhone? Mm. I mean, it was there in the iPhone 11. You get these little green dot specks going across, skipping across the screen.
Yeah, I've witnessed
which
those, yeah.
I found really frustrating anyway. But I was happy with the quality overall. And then the iPhone 12 Pro, I was hoping that they would have tackled that issue. But to me, it's actually got worse. And I'm someone that shoots a lot of night shoots. And so I'm kind of, that's in my domain. And I was like, oh, shit, this is not good. You know, it worked very well under low light in the sense of what you can capture. But this ghosting was on another level. And I was experimenting and finding it's not even about a light source being in the lens. The light source can actually be outside the lens in the sense of you don't actually see the lamp that the light's coming from, but the light is still bouncing off the ring of the actual lens, and it's bouncing through the glasses, however many there are in the iPhone. I think it's reflecting off metal inside the sensor and bouncing back, causing the ghosting issue. That's only my view on it, so don't take that as a written thing. But it's what I'm experiencing, what I'm seeing with my own eyes, is what I think is going on.
Very interesting. I mean, I have to kind of play devil's advocate. If Nick Garnett was on this particular call, I'm pretty sure he'd wade straight in with, but why would you choose to shoot low light stuff with a phone when you could use a mirrorless or a DSLR or a C300 or whatever the hell it might be? Like, it's one of the key weaknesses of the phones. Well, it always has been, hasn't it? Like, zoom is one that's still a perpetual issue unless you've got an S20 from Samsung. And then low light performance has always been the other one. So do you think that the latest generation of phone, aside from the artifact issue, do you think the latest generation of phone has done enough to basically facilitate really, really good low-light cinematography?
Oh, I mean, I would generally say it's got a long way to go, but I would say that the iPhone 12 Pro Max does perform exceptionally well under low light. Mm. And I could see that even with a comparison with a low-light episode that I shot for Filmic Pro using the iPhone 11 Pro Max. I could actually, you know, I could sit there and compare, and there is a difference. And I could actually push it a lot more in the color grade
because
on the iPhone 12 Pro Max. So in that sense, I was really happy with the development. But I just thought, why are they not dealing with this really basic issue that has been there for a long time, mm-hmm. but it's become more noticeable with the newer phones that they've been launching each year? I mean, it was there in the iPhone 8. But it was not really noticeable. But it seems to have just developed and got worse. And I it puzzles me as to what Apple's thinking is behind that, because I've researched online and I'm seeing hundreds of complaints about that particular issue.
It's kind of amazing if you think about it, because certainly in the last two generations of the phones, from when Chris Cohen hopped up on stage and basically talked about Filmic Pro double take, it's like they made a very public commitment towards basically trying to empower indie filmmakers. You'd kind of think there's a drop in the ball in a big way and kind of contradictory in a big sense, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think, and particularly the iPhone 12 Pro Max, which again, they drove at being for the creatives, you know, et cetera, that they put more into the lenses and, you know, more 47%, you know, more low light sensitivity, et cetera, whatever the actual term was they used. Mm. All these fancy things to get you to go for it. And I mean, don't get me wrong, overall, you know, to be able to shoot in 10-bit for me on using the iPhone 12 Pro Max has been absolutely extraordinary. And I just think that you were only at the beginning of that development, and that's amazing that they've now instigated that. That gives huge amounts of, you know, space to work with your imagery in post-production. But I'm kind of old school in my camera operating, and I like to shoot as close as I can possibly with the phone to what I expect to see in the edit when I put it together. I don't want to have to repair it. I don't want to have to do that. That's not a technique that I was trained to do.
Yeah.
And I don't like doing it. But I can see that there's a lot of patchwork that's going to have to go on, particularly with night shoots. But then interestingly, I did just briefly for an hour, I did some daylight filming on a really lovely sunny day yesterday. I think it was yesterday morning. And again, the same issue is there, you know, which is coming from just the sunlight. And you're not filming at the sun at all. but somehow it's bouncing through that lens and it's causing the ghosting artifact issue again. And I'm like, okay, so is this a matte box issue? Is this that we got to put different glass on the front of the lens? You know, this is where I'm technically thinking now that something has to be developed to counteract that issue.
In many ways, I wish that Scott, basically, from Moondog, was on this call this week because, I mean, you know, his background, obviously, is he was Kodak. He's specialist in glass and has been involved in the process of making lenses for smartphones for over a decade. I'd love to hear his thoughts. But anyway, we can always fish it out with him afterwards and see what his thoughts are.
I think you should tap into him, Glenn, on that one because we've had the conversation, myself and him.
Oh, okay.
About this particular issue. I can't go into it, but I'm sure he'd be relatively open to discuss it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Interesting. Listen, we I turn to the audience a little bit. So I have a question. At least Don Anderson has his hand up, is looking to hop up on stage with us. Let me just invite him up for a question. Don, hopefully you can still hear me okay. Hello, Don. How are you?
Good. Good. I do real estate photography, and I use the iPhone 10 with the moment wide angle.
Mm-hmm.
And this ghosting issue is just a bear. I mean, from chandeliers and pendant lights hanging, and no matter what angle, it really limits what you can capture because of it. Because then you'll have these dancing five little lights going across your scene. So yes, it would be great to see that they could figure that out somehow.
It's not something that I don't think it's even possible as a result of the ultra wide and the pro cameras, but it's not something that a lens hood could potentially correct, could it? It's not light entering the lens at a particularly weird angle and refracting around.
I think it's an outside accessory. That's my thinking at the moment. It's the only thing, because clearly Apple are not going to change that issue at the moment. Who knows with the latest phones that come out. But at the moment, to launch the iPhone 12 Pro Max at the level that they launched it at, that is something as a filmmaker I would have expected, that particularly trying to sell it to the creative industries, you know, that this is the phone for you. This is for photography. This is for, you know, your YouTubing or whatever it might be. I'm really surprised that they would know that issue's there, and they've just gone, oh, well, you know, that you'll just sort of push it as it is. I mean, I just can't understand the thinking behind it. But to me, there has to be another accessory to tackle that issue. And I don't know whether it means development of a piece of glass that you have to put over the lenses to counteract that ghosting.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I was even madly thinking, how about if you reverse an anti-glare glass, but actually reversed it so it was actually looking in on the lens instead of outwards, so that it would actually stop the light bouncing out? You know, it's kind of, that's where I'm, you know, just on a test view, that I'm already kind of thinking down that route.
Yeah, that is bizarre, isn't it? I'm looking at the audience, and I know that we have filmmakers, and we have photographers, and we have top-of-the-range graphic designers, and cameramen, and everyone in the actual audience. Is there anyone else who wants to hop up on the stage and join in this conversation? The little hand-raising icon has popped up and down twice at this stage. Don, did you want to come back in?
Yes, just for one quick thing. I know it's after seeing the Moondog, I think it was, that shield you were talking about earlier in the conversation, I thought about maybe jerry rigging something just to see if going past the lens would stop that. I don't know, but I'm going to try it this week.
Interesting. Keep us posted. So, yeah.
Yeah, Don. So that what we would call that is in our industry that's called a matte box. So it's like putting a hood over the lens. I think that will help, but I don't think it will counteract the issue with the newer iPhones. I think there's more going on than that.
Okay.
But it could help, and it is worth experimenting with. I mean, I did find that it did reduce the issue by maybe 15-20% on a night shoot when I started using the black side of a reflector, and I just held it over my head and the actual phone lens, and it managed, by angling it over the lens, I was able to cut out certain issues of light bounce. But it won't remove all of it.
Okay. Thanks.
Well, I know Courtney has just joined us up here in the conversation as well. Courtney obviously is my co-host on the podcast, and he's, as of about 3 days ago, a proud owner of a 12 Pro Max. Courtney, have you encountered this issue with the kind of artifacts within the lens? Have you had enough time to shoot with it even?
Yeah, actually I have, but one of the things that that actually helped me was putting a conversion lens on. And so I've been using my B-Script Pro and then putting a B-Script Pro lens. I just happen to be using that particular lens because I don't have the case for my Moment lenses right now. But dots flying around in there is reduced a little bit using a conversion lens, for me at least.
Interesting. What's your typical rig, Cass, just for people who might be interested in knowing what you use to shoot? Like, it's not just the phone. You have it in something, do you?
Sorry, what do I use as a rig? Sorry.
Yeah, so, I mean, what accessories do you already have on the phone, just out of curiosity?
Not a lot, generally. I mean, I would generally say 90% of my shoots are just using the lenses on the phone. I do have the Moondog anamorphic lens, which I thoroughly enjoy using. But I'm very specific as to when I want to use it and what it would be for. It would be very specific shots that I would want to get. I do have some Moment lenses, and I do have a B-Script lens. But to be honest, they don't come off the shelf that often. They do on specific shoots. It really depends on what the plan of the shoot is. But generally, I'm just out filming with the lenses on the phone, an ND filter, you know, using the Moondog Labs multi adapter, the camera adapter, which is brilliant ring that clicks on, then you can attach any ND you want, and a gimbal. And that's kind of as far as it goes with my gear, to be honest.
Right, yeah, pretty low key. I'm just, do you mind me asking, actually, because I had this question offline with Scott last week in relation to variable ND, because they only do fixed ND with Moondog. Do you have a particular variable ND that you like?
Do you know what? I haven't actually found one that I do like.
Ah, okay.
I'm still, that's something I'm experimenting with. I mean, I've still got, what I'd love to do, actually, I've still got loads of old 4x4 glass. I've got boxes of it from the old days. Be great to put that in front of the camera lenses. I don't know how the hell that would attach, but as far as variable NDs, I haven't found any that I'm overly pleased with, and I've tried different makes. So I tend to stick with just fixed, to be honest. I do use a polarizer on occasions, circular polarizer, because they are really good for anti-reflection from glass or water, but generally I would stick to a fixed ND filter. It's different for everyone. I mean, I kind of know my ND filter, so I know if I'm sticking a 64 ND on or a 32 ND, I kind of know and expect to know what it is I'm going to get in my footage. But I think everyone needs to, you know, everyone asks me what brand of ND. You really have to explore it yourself, because it really is about what is pleasing to you and what you like personally, I think, with NDs.
All right, interesting.
Yeah, NDs are really interesting and very tricky sometimes, especially the variable NDs. I've been using one for years that the K&F concept variable ND, and it's been great for me, but, you know, some other people have had issues with different ones, but this one works for me, you know, and it's a 62 millimeter and it's great. It's fine. You know, I can't say, I haven't put it up against other ones to see, you know, if there's any of that, you know, kind of cross hatching or anything like that you'll typically see. And I don't particularly get any sort of, you know, like dark spots or anything like that. So it seems to be working for me. But, you know, I haven't compared a whole lot, but I know that NDs can be a problem for a lot of people.
Very good. I'm going to throw it open to the floor again. I know Mark Settle has joined us again. Mark, have you got anything that you want to put into the mix? You've been fantastic at coming at people for the last couple of weeks with great questions. Konstantinos, likewise. Anne, any questions that you'd like to fire into the mix? Richie has joined us. Welcome to Clubhouse, Richie. You're welcome up on stage as well. I want to make it a conversation as opposed to just necessarily a one-to-one. Yes, we have a hand up. Let's see who's there. Richie is going to join us. Hang on a second. Pull him up on stage. I think you know Richie Cass, don't you, through the event?
Cass, we were to promise each other that we would do something for ourselves and for other people and to come back together and email ourselves. We never sent those emails.
Oh, God. Right.
I love it when skeletons get dragged out of the closet live.
That's got, I'm honored, Len. I've never used this technology before, and I felt like a complete troglodyte earlier. I didn't know what the hell I was signing up for, so this is great. Thank you.
Oh, welcome into the mix, Richie. How are things with you?
Good, good. Very exciting time from a technology perspective. I don't know, maybe some guys remember that when I first introduced Sal to the group, I'd met Sal Massimini via Instagram randomly, and I decided to do an interview with her. And I used Skype and I used Luma Fusion and Luma FX to balance the light a little bit. And, you know, now suddenly you see television, national television, everybody doing podcasts and video podcasts. And it's quite extraordinary that the whole conversation about broadcast quality is probably gone out the window at this stage. Or maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, Mark Settle.
Oh, I think there's a few people in. I think there's a few people in the audience there might have a couple of comments on it. All that said, I'm doing a talk with the Royal Television Society in about a week's time, and part of that whole team is discussing this idea of the notion of how broadcast quality standards can be loosened, shall we say, when it comes to COVID. Like, people have had to adapt, and we've seen tons of mobile shot footage end up on air, and live shots and everything else.
Honestly,
from mobile,
Glenn, I think that's what really turned the page for mobile and, you know, for webcams and things like that. But the fact that the aesthetic, the mobile aesthetic, is so ubiquitous now, I think that's really what turned the tide a little bit and opened up people's minds to what it can do, and that's really interesting. And now that, you know, you have cameras that are shooting 4K, 8K, 10-bit, you know, Dolby Vision, you know, all of these things, it really is. I think we're within a generation or two of mobile devices that are going to overtake DSLR. So if we're not already there in some cases, but yeah, it is a, never has there been a time, there's never been a better time to be a content creator, whether that's, you know, film, television, you know, social, whatever. Never has there ever been a better time to be a content creator, because you have these incredible tools in your pocket, or, you know, or in your lap, that you can leverage. And it's just an amazing time right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're probably preaching to the converted here when I look at the names and faces of everyone who's listening, Courtney. I think almost everyone that I think is on the list in front of me has either been at Mojo Fest at some stage or has been in the group in some stage. I'm pretty sure of that, actually. Okay. So we have a captive audience, but all very much probably on the same hymn sheet. Although few people might have a few comments in there. If they want to wade in, they're welcome to. Cass and Rich, just so you know, I'm not being rude, I have muted your mics just because I was getting a bit of background noise across Courtney's talk there, and his level's a tiny bit low. So I just wanted to temporarily mute. But if you want to come back in, just unmute yourself. You're more than welcome to do that. Any other questions?
Hey, Glenn.
Yeah.
Glenn, I have a quick question. What have people been creating with their mobile? I mean, you know, because I know that, you know, there's the Mojos out there and filmmakers like me, but what have people been creating out there that's really exciting in the group?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, personally, I got to shoot for the first time in quite a long time pre-Christmas on a commission gig. Thank God it was a paid one. And that was really, really nice, because sometimes as a trainer, I'm showing other people's work as examples, and I've often been asked, well, can we see something that you've shot? And it's like, oh, yeah, let me just have a rummage around here in my bag. There's a USB key somewhere. But no, actually, that was really, really enjoyable. And it's, you know, I still feel like I said this to people when training, you have to shoot to build up the muscle memory so that you can not let the technology get in the way of the story, if that makes sense. Like, if you're footing around 100%. With buttons and menus and stuff, then your focus is on that, not on actually the storytelling part. So you really, it is something that just needs practice, 100%. I keep saying that a lot. But I don't know. I mean, I've had chats over the last week with quite a few different people on different projects who have kind of either gone back to mobile shooting by virtue of having to work from home, or have tried it for the very first time and have been pretty much pleasantly surprised at the quality and results that they can pull off it. And I'm like going, it's 10 years old. It's not a new thing. It's been around for quite some time. But as Mark Egan reminded me recently, he was saying, you know, the video journalism idea, which I don't know if we want to give credit to Michael Rosenblum from 1994, but anyway, it's been around a long time as well. And yet there are still stations who are trying to wrap their heads around this idea of having journalists doing self-shooting with small broadcast cameras. How many years ago was that? My math is crap, but, you know, that's what, 25 years ago. Are we going to have to wait 25 years for people to really accept mobile as being, like, de facto good enough to be able to get the story out? Or actually, as I'm about to try and put a cat among the pigeons at the RTS thing, do we still need to worry about it anymore? Like, I know that COVID has created a mini boom in relation to television viewership, mainly because everyone's locked up at home with nothing else to do. But when COVID is over and people are allowed back into nature and we all tear our clothes off and decide to run through the fields, television viewership will probably reassume its previous kind of, you know, decline, slow, gradual 10% decline year on year. And then the question is mobile the new platform for news anyway? I mean, obviously, I know there's always going to be high-end content that needs high-end professional cameras with huge big sensors and huge big lenses and all that. I get that, whether that's sport or whether that's sitcoms and drama and everything, fine. But for news in particular, which is my own personal bugbear, like, mobile is still, it is still, 10 years in, it is still a massively missed opportunity. And even, I've heard this conversation twice in the last 2 weeks where people have actually said to me, oh my God, thank God we can get back to shooting with proper cameras now. It's like, well, actually now you can't because they've just extended the lockdown. But proper cameras, like, oh, that, like, honestly, that's like me choking on a herringbone. But anyway, that's just my own personal rant. Feel free to come in on that, anyone, if you fancy.
Dan, to qualify my earlier point, what I was really getting at was that pre-lockdown, I was quite excited because I had kind of gone from phones to DSLRs, and then I was getting a bit ridiculous. And then suddenly I recognized, hang on a second, I don't think this is really so sustainable, because I can find people like Sal or, you know, Kat in the UK or Courtney in the USA, and I can interview them without leaving my house. And I worked out a workflow that I could do this quite easily, quite lightly with the phone, but actually produce quite good quality broadcast values, especially in circumstances where quite often people are using similar phones. But, you know, back to the cat and the among the pigeons point, I don't know if anyone saw from CES this year, Consumer Electronics Show, Crew in the Box. And it's effectively an 80,000 euro mobile setup.
I didn't see that explicit one, but I was approached by a company about 6 months ago with a similar solution just as COVID kicked off, and they had done the same thing. But it wasn't a phone. It was a mobile solution in the sense it was a live camera shot, but it was a similar price, actually. Now that you mention it.
This is like an AK cinema camera.
Right. Oh, okay. Interesting. Is that needed for TV news? Discuss.
That's exactly the point that I'm making. Like, there's a certain point beyond which that you just hit diminishing returns. And if you look at the kind of work that Cast especially is doing, like, I mean, it's just unreal that you wouldn't think, if you didn't know, you definitely wouldn't know that he's shooting on a mobile if somebody said, is that shot on the phone or an 80,000 euro cinema camera?
Does anyone, I brought this up when we did the summit, does anyone remember the Revenge of the Great Camera Shootout? Is that ringing bells?
Oh, yeah, the director thing where everyone had to pick cameras. Yeah, I remember you saying about this at the time.
It's like, that's still online, guys. If you haven't seen it, honestly, it's an entertaining mini documentary commissioned. I think it was it Kessler Crane put the money behind
it? It was Kessler,
and Zacuto, wasn't it? Kessler and Zacuto,
Zacuto.
Yeah,
that's what it was.
But I mean, honestly, those guys having an absolute meltdown at the prospect of kind of being shown to not be able to tell the difference in a cinema environment amidst all their peers. We're looking at grown adults verging on an absolute mental breakdown, and they're doing it on camera because they just realised they've been completely set up. I mean, I don't know if Zacuto stopped doing that because they were basically being boycotted by the big boys as a result of it, but certainly it makes for some amazing viewing. And that was when we spoke to him. Michael Corbell was basically the guy who was operating Filmic Pro on the set of that, and he was shooting, if I remember rightly, it was an iPhone 4S or an iPhone 5. It's that far back. So, I mean, Christ, think about how far we've come, as you say, Cass, with 10-bit and Dolby Vision, all the other stuff that we've got at our fingertips now. It'd be so interesting to do a compare and contrast, I suppose, now with the blind viewing test.
Oh, definitely. I mean, obviously, for in my field, it would be great to see those levels being tested and pushed in documentary or music video content or, drama, feature length. Be interesting to see those combinations. I mean, when I'm teaching at the Met Film School at Ealing Studios, A lot of the students there have been rigorously trained in a very specific way, and you know that's what you do. With the main, you know, your RED camera system, your ARRI system, etc. And absolutely, those skills are key. They are essential. And then you introduce the phone and say, well, let's try something with a phone. They're always very hesitant. But within a few weeks, they're all running out shooting stuff because it's just the speed of it, just the process. Is the quality better? No, it's just different. It's just a different outlet, and it's just a different way of working, and it offers a different format. Is the quality good enough to be broadcast? Yeah, absolutely. Of course it is. Is it good enough to be on a cinema screen? Yes, it is. Do you need to shoot an 8K? No, you don't need to shoot an 8K. It's just about getting out there and telling a story, and you know, using your skills as a filmmaker, or learning that trade as a filmmaker to go out and shoot stuff. And I mean, I'm seeing a lot of short film content being shot on phones, and some of the stuff in the last 2 years has absolutely been mind blowing to me. I'm like, wow. That's inspiring. You know, there's absolutely no way I could have, as a professional, I could not have said myself whether that was a professional camera or a phone.
No, that's brilliant. Yeah, a really good sign.
It is really interesting because, you know, coming from my perspective with, you know, film and television, I have a project that I'm going to be doing with Rick Gomez and Steve Zahn. You know, they're two Hollywood actors and other actors that are in the project. And it's a series. And we're shooting it mobile, we're editing it mobile, you know, so Filmic Pro, LumaFusion, and doing it to prove that mobile is ready for prime time. And I think one of the interesting things is that, you know, Steve and Rick and, you know, Judy Greer, all these people, they're really used to these big giant cameras in their faces. But Steve and Rick in particular are incredibly excited about using mobile because they're like, oh, we're going to be able to shoot really fast, and we're going to be able to put the camera in really interesting places, you know, that you couldn't, you know, put even a bigger DSLR. And that's really exciting to them. And, you know, we're going to be able to move, and we're going to be able to shoot and edit, you know, right there. I mean, if I wanted to, I could shoot and edit right there on the phone and just making sure that we got what we needed and then, you know, bring it back to the iPad later, or to the M1 now that LumaFusion runs on the M1. But there's something about the speed and the intimacy that is allowed using mobile. And that's awesome. And that is with, you know, Hollywood folks. So it's going to be a really interesting time because, you know, as, you know, Glenn has heard me say 1,000 times, we know that the technology is not getting worse from here. It's only going
to
get better.
Yeah. Can I add something to that, Courtney? It's a really valid point that you've made there. And I found when I was working with mainstream camera systems and we're having to work out our budget through the script and working, you know, and breaking everything down, I actually found I got myself to a point, and it's partly why I went over to phones, amongst other things. But the main thing was I was getting to a point of just being exhausted with trying to get the project into development, to get the film production up and running, the cost of things of it, raising the finance, etc. And then also then feeling, do you know what? The script is restricted. I'm getting restricted by the script because I'm writing and thinking, well, we can't afford that shot, because that's going to take 50 minutes to set up. We're going to need certain crew for that. We're going to need a crane for that shot. So I'm going to have to scrap that shot and think of something different because we don't have the budget for that. And so on. So, and I felt, well, hang on a minute. This is, you know, actually, this is affecting my visual concepts because I'm constantly thinking about what's affordable, what's not affordable. And since going to mobile phone in 2014, I've never had so much freedom in the way I shoot, the pace that I shoot, what I'm able to capture, the angles that I can capture, the way I've worked with actors, and actors have been blown away. Like you said, you know, actors have been blown away at the freedom that they have felt working with mobile phones, because they are, it's not in their face. You can move around them. You can create a whole scenario where you're not interrupting them, and you get some real performances. I mean, so it's, I think it's just really exciting time.
Can I play devil's advocate in that and ask you the question? I remember there was an interview with Sean Baker, not immediately after Tangerine. It was after the piece that he did for, what was the name of the clothing brand? Do you remember the short film they did called Snowbirds, which was basically a marketing material? But it was, I mean, it was beautifully shot, like a beautiful, beautiful short film. But I remember, because I tried it multiple times to get him to speak at the event, and whole saga in the background of that. But he had kind of intimated in the conversation towards the last one that he was getting blowback from Hollywood because he'd become an advocate for mobile phones. And he, I'm not paraphrasing, but I'm giving you the gist of the conversation, he was looking forward to getting back to shooting with a big camera so he could kind of just blend in again. Because he, I think at that stage he'd gotten a bit tired of being of basically his name being associated solely with being the iPhone guy, if you will. Has that been something that either you guys have actually experienced in your careers, that because you are, I guess, if you don't mind me saying, in many ways synonymous now with mobile production, have you had any kind of negative kickback from that, from peers? Or I expect to be booed off the stage at the RTS thing, by the way, in a week's time, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I could answer that quickly. I mean, yes, there has been. I mean, you know, I, for different reasons, I stopped using main camera systems back in 2014. So that's, you know, coming up 7 years now that I've been working purely with phones. And, you know, and that was it. I was just going to work with phones. That's what I creatively wanted to explore. It intrigued me. It re-stimulated my creativity, which I felt had become exhausted working in various productions over the years. And it just re-fired me to explore new things. And there have been kickbacks from that. You know, there are certain industries that are like, well, there's just no way that you're going to come on. You know, you're not coming here with a phone. Seriously? No, we want a big camera. We want this. We want that. That's what we're paying for. No, you're paying for the experience, the knowledge, and the skills. It's not about the actual thing that you're recording with. It's the person that you're employing and the skills that they bring to the table that gets you, you know, the project that you want done. And, you know, as soon as you mention a phone, you think, yeah, of course. And even now, there's still a little bit of that that goes on. But then I have found in the last couple of years that people do get in touch with me because they heard I experiment with phones and they want to engage with it. They're intrigued by it. So there's an interesting conversation that sort of develops from there. But I think the main film industry has still got issues with mobile phones and kind of, you know, see me as a little bit of an outsider. But interestingly, I'm lecturing students who are, you know, doing their MAs in film production. So it's there. The seed is there.
Great. What about you, Courtney? Have you had any experience of that type of blowback?
Yes and no. So a lot of times, so I'll give you an example. I did an episode of a docuseries, the reenactment of on a docuseries, and everybody else on the other episodes was doing their things, you know, Sony, you know, FS, whatevers, and, you know, like all these bigger cameras. And I didn't tell the executive producer of the show that I was going to do mine on a phone. You know, so I grabbed my phone. At the time, it was a Samsung Galaxy, like Note 8, I think is what I shot on. But I grabbed that phone, an anamorphic lens, and a little small gimbal, and, you know, flew down to New Mexico and shot. It was a Western thing. And I went down there and shot, brought the footage back. You know, I did my quick edit of it and then send them the footage, and they were all blown away. And they were like, oh man, that was great. What did you shoot on? And because it was a Zoom call or a Skype call, and I held up my phone. And after the executive, you know, picked his jaw up off the desk, you know, he was just like, the network loved it. So what that told me was that if you don't tell somebody, they're probably not going to know, because a lot of these people who are looking at these things, they hear all these buzzwords like red, Alexa LF, you know, and all these other devices. But if you don't tell them what it is, they're probably not going to know. So I was just like, okay, it's ready. It's time. So now, again, like with this particular project that I'm going to be doing with Rick and Steve, and then this other sci-fi that I'm going to be doing, I'm just doing it mobile because that's how I want to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the conceit of it is that we're doing it on mobile. Not to say that it's going to look like it's shot on mobile. We're using conversion lenses and, you know, filters and, you know, all sorts of, you know, the normal stuff. It just happens to be that the computer attached to the lens is a phone rather than a RED. So, so yes, you do get blowback, but, you know, again, if you didn't tell somebody, they're probably not going to know.
Interesting. Really interesting. Guys, it's coming up to almost the hour on it. I'd like to throw out one more opportunity for anyone in the audience who wants to throw a question to go now. Would be good timing. Raise your hand and I'll try and include you. Other than Mark telling me on Twitter that my sound is crap. Thanks, Mark. I haven't had any other comments come in through that particular pathway, but glad to see some engagement basically within the Clubhouse app itself. That's great. And ta-ta, we have a question. This time the question's coming from Alan, who, if I remember rightly, is a pro cameraman. Alan, what do you have to add to the conversation?
Well, for me, I got to wonder if one of the things that's holding us back is glass. Working in news, you know, I came from an era where I loved my 22-1 Canon ENG lens with a doubler on it. And, you know, it's a fine piece of glass. And, of course, with the phones, we're limited. We got that fixed focal length generally. So as far as recognition within news, that's the one holdback I've got. I mean, we teach our students now I'm a teacher, to use a phone as yet another tool in the tool belt among all the cameras you use. But of course, that one thing is the piece of glass. If you've got the bad guy who's 100 meters away, you're screwed on a phone. So I'm wondering what everybody else feels about the quality of the glass holding us back.
Ooh, pick me.
Go, Courtney, go.
Alan, this is something that comes up a lot, right? You know, obviously there are conversion lenses out there that look great, you know, and, you know, nobody would say that they were, you know, like a cook, I mean, at least, you know, from a filmmaking, you know, perspective, like, you know, a cook or a super speed or anything like that. It's not that. However, depth of field adapters are really interesting pieces of kit that you can use. So obviously you can, you know, put a depth of field adapter on and put just about any lens you want on there. You're not going to have the zoom. You know, obviously you're not going to have the, you know, it's a mechanical thing that you actually have to, you know, manually focus, and that's fine. But that's something you should look into, you know, and they're inexpensive, you know, relative to, you know, getting a phone and, you know, whatever kind of bigger camera. So if you get a depth of field adapter, $150 to $250, you know, Ulanzi makes one, and Beast Grip, they also make one, and you can put just about any lens on there that you want.
Yeah.
I got to wonder, though, does it defeat the purpose of having a phone? We're a lot of us are into this because we like having that quick mobility. You look at, you know, Cassius's rig, there's not a lot on there. And he likes the limitlessness, if that's a word, of going where he can with that small rig. So are we defeating the purpose by having a really huge, beautiful piece of glass on a little phone? I'd love to have something that is equally as small as the phone, but still a good quality piece of glass.
But that was what I was going to comment on, Courtney, if I can just come in on it for a second. So if we're framing this specifically just in the restraints of an iPhone, then you're absolutely 100% right, Alan. But it would be disingenuous to a certain extent to say that that's true of all smartphones. Because if you look at a Huawei P30 Pro, if you look at the Samsung S20, we have lenses that are optically capable of 30x zoom. And okay, for photography only on the S20, we can punch in up to 100x, but of course the quality goes to crap when you switch to video. But nonetheless, the technology of the way that the periscope lens works is quite an interesting evolution for smartphones. Now, just because Apple decided to go the other direction and go ultra wide doesn't necessarily coat it as, you know, that's a failing across all smartphones. And I think it's indicative that 10 years in, some of the manufacturers certainly have started to take on board the fact that one of those limitations, zoom, is a major limitation for professional adoption. So I don't think it's something that can just be said as a blanket limitation. The other thing I would say on this, because I've had this argument, including being held up against the wall by a cameraman at one stage about it, is I, at one stage, when I was trying to implement mobile journalism in RT back in 2013, we took the evening news bulletin. This is the sort of forensic crap we had to do at the time. But we took the evening news bulletin, we sat down, we documented every single shot that was used in the entire 1 hour show. And we basically had a simple criteria. Could that have been done with a phone? Would you like to guess what percentage of an hour long television news program we worked out forensically, I would argue, there's more than one of me and the panel, could have been done with a phone? Would you like to guess the percentage?
Yeah, I'd think 80 to 90%.
Yeah, you're bang on. 82% of it could have been done on a phone. And the priority, or if you like, the main shots that were not, would simply not have worked, were ones exactly as you've identified, where there was something happening, like at a breaking news and there was a police cordon and there was a car on fire half a mile away. Yeah, we're not going to get those shots, right? Or it was sports. The last part of the bulletin, which was all sport-laden, was the one that killed it, and that was what actually tilted it back in the 18%. But I remember having an argument with one of the extremely, I have huge respect for this guy, I'm not going to name him, but he's an Al Jazeera cameraman. Konstantinos is on the call, so I'll tread gently. I have huge respect for him, Kay. But he was saying, look, mobile phones are never going to be taken seriously in this organization because we have money and we can have the best of the best cameras that we need. So we have two or three cameras. I know this is true in the BBC as well. They often have maybe a C300 and they have a big ENG camera. And I remember talking to one of the BBC cameramen saying, so how do you choose which camera you use on a shoot? And he went, oh, we just let the aesthetic decide and the timing. So if we want to do a nice, beautiful feature piece, we'll take the C300 out, put a nice piece of prime optical glass on the front and get lovely shallow depth of field because we can take our time. If it's breaking news, the ENG camera's on my shoulder and I can punch in as I need. And my kind of argument was, well, I'm not necessarily an advocate of throw out all those big pro cameras because we can do everything with the phone. I'm much more a case of maybe just scale back the massive cash investment on 30 or 40, 60,000 euro ENG cameras to maybe 20 ENG cameras. And get the equivalent of 150 smartphones out in the field with people telling stories that can get into niche audiences and communities that we're otherwise not covering. That's my argument. It's not a case of one or the other. It's a mixed bag. It's kind of, let's look at the strengths of all the different platforms that are out there. And mobile, I would still argue, is being grossly underutilized in news. Settle has to come in on this. Come on, Mark. You're leaving me wide open here, lads.
Yeah. I mean, the last little bit of that I'll throw out, because remember, guys, all these things are, like these phones, DSLRs, even cinema cameras, ENG cameras, they're all really just computers with a lens attached to them, right? So, you know, the glass means a lot, obviously. So if you can put a glass in front of almost any computer, and now, again, you know, you have some Android and now iPhones that can shoot 10-bit, you know, so, you know, what is your real argument other than sensor size? And even that, you know, there's computational, you know, photography and videography that we can take into account now, you know, so you really have to think about what the trade-off is that you're looking for. Yes, you can get a phone into anywhere, and you can put a conversion lens on, a really nice piece of conversion lens glass in front of the native glass on there. You know, but what are you really losing? What are you gaining? What are you losing when it comes to, you know, a bigger camera, you know, for the style? So it's like the right piece of equipment for the shoot is really what it is.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair comment on it. But I again, Alan, key message: having worked in news for 20 years, like I'm a mixed solutions guy as opposed to Michael Rosenblum, who is like fire everybody because everyone can do it with their phones type thing. Love Michael DeBitz, by the way.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that, Glenn. I think the best newsrooms around are the ones who are saying, okay, we're going to have a lot of, as there's a company to call them now, MMJs.
Oh, yeah.
And converting everybody to MMJs. But at the same time, let's keep some craft shooters and some craft cameras and some craft editors in-house as well. So we might be looking at 70 or 80% of the stuff being shot mobile. It's possible. And then for the long-form pieces or that breaking story where, yeah, the bad guy's 100 meters away, yeah, then we send the craft shooter with the bigger camera. So it's I always like to think of it as another tool in the tool belt rather than an absolute replacement.
Yep, I like that strategy too. I'm on the same page 100%. Guys, it's been a really, really engaging talk. I think we could probably go for another round of an hour, although I'll be risking a second divorce if I do that, so I'm not going to go there. But I've really enjoyed chatting to you. Cassius, thanks so much for giving up so much of your Friday evening for kicking this conversation off today. I know we've broadened beyond just mobile filmmaking into the whole new stuff, partly responsible there. Sorry about that. But, I mean, nonetheless, I think it was quite an engaging discussion. Can I just get in at the end? So we've talked a little bit about you still in development work on a few more Filmic Pro tutorials. Anything else in the pipeline that you want to share with us, Cass, or is that all still confidential NDA and all the rest of it?
Yeah. Well, no, firstly, I love these conversations, and it's fantastic hearing from other people as well. And I could go on, to be honest, but I don't want you to get divorced, so that's not cool. So, there are some things in the pipeline. I've just been hired to be the cinematographer using the iPhone 12 Pro Max on a feature film, which is a development. It's basically a modern day play taken from Shakespeare. I can't say which one it is, but it's going to be set in modern day London. So that's really exciting. I'm really looking forward to that. So we're in the sort of development plans of that, and it's received the budget. So it's pretty big for me to be able to come on board as the cinematographer for that. So that's pretty cool. Beyond that, I just take it, you know, particularly the pandemics we're in, I just take it as it comes.
Very good. Alan, any final words you want to throw in the mix?
No, I probably said too much and dominated too much, so I'll leave it up to you. I need you to have a good Valentine's weekend with your wife.
Great to hear from Alan, actually. I haven't seen Alan for probably 2 years now, so hello, Alan.
Cheers to you, too.
There you go. See, this is what Clubhouse is really all about. That was the idea. A speakeasy where you can kind of drop in, have a catch up and shoot the breeze on topical issues related to what we all love and do. Courtney, final words before we wrap it.
Everybody who is out there who's already using phones or you know, thinking about using phones, if you're on the fence, just do it. You know, I always say that you don't need permission to create your vision, and phones and, you know, mobile in general kind of unlocks that for you. So just get out there and shoot something. You know, the content is king, and the content is made by with tools. And these tools that we have that are super accessible, you know, give you the option to do anything you want. So just get out there and get after it.
I love it. You're not in commission from Apple now, Courtney, are you? Joking. All right, let's wrap it up. Okay, as we come to the end of the episode, quick moment to say thanks a minute for everyone who's joined in, both listening and contributing to the conversation. I really appreciate it. That's kind of what this is really all about. Let's make it a conversation. If you do fancy joining me as a guest, or if you have suggestions for maybe someone you think might be interested, do hit me up on Twitter. I have open DMs. I'm very much looking for people to chat to if they're willing to go up an hour on their Friday evenings. But anyway, we've gone an hour and 10 minutes, 10 minutes over my target, but it's good and it's been a great conversation. I've really enjoyed it. So again, thanks to all of you for participating. And with that, until next week, bye-bye for now.
Cheers, everyone. Thank you for being here.